From the home of the Codebreakers and the birthplace of modern computing, this is the Bletchley Park podcast. Welcome to another Bletchley Park podcast extra. On Wednesday the 18th of June, Her Royal Highness the Duchess of Cambridge visited Bletchley Park to mark completion of the £8 million Heritage Lottery Fund supported restoration project. This uniquely historic site has been restored to its wartime glory, enabling visitors to experience what it was like for the codebreakers who worked here and creating a permanent and fitting tribute to those extraordinary men and women. Among the honoured guests was Nick Coffer from BBC Three Counties Radio, who broadcast his entire afternoon show from a great vantage point next to the Oval. Thanks go to Nick, Gareth, Nia and Mark from BBC Three Counties Radio for allowing us to bring you highlights of their show.
I'm at Bletchley Park today for a very, very important special occasion. Today marks the completion of the £8 million renovation of Bletchley Park. They're very, very proud of it. It looks wonderful. There's a new visitor centre to make the experience extra special for people coming along to learn about the history of Bletchley Park. And for the Duchess as well, there's a very personal reason to be here, because her grandma, who was called Valerie Glassbrow, she actually was a code breaker here. And in fact, she worked here with her sister Mary, and they both married Middleton brothers. And as I make my way down the driveway, the Duchess of Cambridge is actually making her way towards hut number three. As the best part of 300 or 400 people here applauding her, she makes her way round towards hut number three, where I understand she's going to have lunch, and she's going to have lunch with a veteran who actually worked with her grandma, who's going to give a first-hand account of what she did here with her grandma. And she'll be meeting a number of veterans. And of course, the veterans are really important for Bletchley Park, because without them, they wouldn't know what actually happened here, because the buildings were in such disrepair that it was extremely difficult to get any real sense of the history and what people actually did here. So the veterans have been absolutely key in the renovation, giving all the stories, all the details, all the colours as well, because even down to the details of the colours, the way they've renovated the huts here, they've actually renovated them in the exact colours that they were back in 1914, 1945. And I was last here a year ago, and the difference is phenomenal. Hut number three that I'm looking at now as Catherine makes her way in was basically derelict, and it's sparkling now. It's got a brick frontage. They've painted it green, which again were the colours that it was painted in back in 1940. And what they've done here is they've really given this sense of recreating history. And they say that Bletchley Park was one of Britain's best kept secrets, because it was here that they broke the codes from the Germans and from the Germans' allies. But in many ways, they're right. Bletchley Park is a brilliantly kept secret. For many years, people didn't know it existed, and also people didn't know the role that it played in the Second World War. Now, as the saying goes here, and it's all over the park today, the secret is out. You'll have been reading about Bletchley Park in your papers this morning and seeing it on the news as well. And they are rightly proud of the work they've done here. As I mentioned, £8 million worth of lottery-funded renovation work to really bring Bletchley Park back to what it was, the best part of 70 years ago. And throughout the programme today, I'm going to be talking to a number of the people involved in the project. I'll be talking to veterans. I'll also be talking to the chief executive and many of the people involved in actually putting this place back together, brick by brick, piece of wood by piece of wood. The Duchess is still busily chatting outside hut number six now, chatting to some veterans, obviously getting a real sense of the work that they've been doing here. She arrived here a little after 11:15. Of course, these royal visits are timed down to the last second, and the timetable very, very clear between now and she'll be leaving here at around 1:45. So the visit in total will last a good couple of hours. Gareth Lloyd is with me as well today. He's been following the Duchess since she arrived at 11:15, and we'll be hearing his reports as he makes his way with the royal party. I doubt he'll get any lunch though, but we'll be hearing what Gareth has been seeing throughout the programme as well. So a very, very proud day for Bletchley Park today, and a proud day for the three counties. I say it so often on my programme that we sometimes just don't really appreciate the history that we've got locally. And this is a very, very important site, not only for Bletchley and the three counties, but actually for the whole nation. And without the work of the Codebreakers, in many ways, the war wouldn't have been won. And just as a final thought, I was chatting to my little boy this morning, who, as you well know, is 6 years old. And I was saying to him, I'm going to an event today where the Duchess of Cambridge will be. And he said, wait, why are you going there? And I had to explain what Bletchley Park is. I love telling him the story because he was completely in awe of it. He totally understood what they'd done here, what had happened here. And it just goes to show how important it is to engage the next generation in understanding our history. And that, again, is a very important part of the work that the team here at Bletchley Park are doing. They want to ensure that Bletchley Park remains resplendent for decades to come so that our children and our grandchildren can really get a sense of the history. The Duchess of Cambridge has now made her way into hut number 6, where she's going to enjoy some lunch. So lots more still to come from here at Bletchley Park. I'll have some music for you as well. We'll kick off today with Take That. Gareth Lloyd is following the royal party. He was there when the Duchess arrived this morning.
So Her Royal Highness has just walked into Block C, which is the brand new part of Bletchley Park that opened only about a month ago. This brand new state-of-the-art section in places is a fantastic part as people enter into Bletchley Park. She's now made her way to meet the design team, the actual builders and the actual people who put the ideas of what Block C should look like into reality. Behind this this row of people that she's about to meet are these fantastic paintings, these really large, I guess, 4-foot by 3-foot paintings on easels that showed that the work that went that has gone on here in Bletchley Park. You can see how Block C used to look, the rotting woodwork, the metal rusting away, and when you look around Block C now, how painted beautifully green and cream, how Block C now looks. And this is where first people would enter Bletchley Park and what they would see as they came in for their day here, their experience of Bletchley Park. And she's meeting one by one the people that helped in the restoration, designed the Block C experience that we're going to be making our way around over the next few minutes. It's a really exciting interactive experience here. McAfee, part of Intel Security, is proud to sponsor this this big area, and they're all out here today ready to meet the Duchess as she comes and looks around their interactive experience. Showing how the technologies and the ideas that people were using in World War II, how Bletchley Park's past is very much still in today's context with security and code breaking, and that achievements that the people made in World War II here at Bletchley Park are still very relevant in today's national security.
It's very true. Gareth Lloyd there following the royal party. The work that was done back in the 1940s here in Bletchley Park still incredibly relevant, and actually still extraordinarily modern. When I looked at what the Codebreakers actually did and the machines they built, literally 70 years ahead of their time, and without them, in many ways, we may not have won the Second World War. A lot of hard work and over £8 million of Heritage Lottery money. The project aiming to restore Bletchley Park to its former glory is now complete. The work carried out hopes to help visitors experience what it was like for the Codebreakers working at the Government Code and Cipher School during World War II. Victoria Walpole is the Director of Learning and Collections. Big day, Victoria.
Yes, we're all very excited to have the Duchess here today. And it's such lovely weather. We were so lucky.
The weather is gorgeous. I mentioned earlier on that I spoke to my six-year-old this morning about why I was coming here, and he was fascinated by the Codebreakers. Took a bit of getting his head around, and he couldn't quite work out, you know, why a code would be so complicated that you'd need Codebreakers, because his idea of a code is swapping the first letter of a word or something. But how important is it? I mean, you're obviously here as the Director of Learning. How important is it to engage that generation?
It's really important. We're very conscious here at all times that we're trying to inspire the next generation with the work we do here, as well as, you know, creating a fitting memorial to the Codebreakers from World War II. There's no point in doing that if you're not trying to inspire the next generation with the work that they carried out. And of course, code breaking is so exciting for children, and they love it. I mean, we have, you know, 8,000 plus school children a year go through, and they absolutely love the code breaking, really do.
I've been to Bletchley Park on a number of occasions, and I've watched the developments, and it started off as a fairly one-dimensional attraction. I think it then moved to a two-dimensional attraction, and all this work has turned it into a three-dimensional attraction, hasn't it?
Absolutely. We're so pleased with what the end product of this is, because now it doesn't matter how old you are, you could be 7 or 70, you can walk away from here with a good understanding of what brilliant work went on here during the war, even if you just walk through the huts and see the images, see the films playing and listen to the voices talking about the work. If you take a multimedia guide and you have a go at some of the puzzles on there and you walk around and understand the stories, it's perfect for the whole family now, and I'm really proud to be able to say that.
And as well as being the director of learning, you're director of collections as well. Are we seeing things out now that we'd never previously seen visible to the public?
Absolutely. We've brought out lots of the objects that were hidden in the archive and put them on in display cases. Lots of material on loan from GCHQ. We have the Hut 3 headlines in one of the cases, which were the intelligence reports that came out of Hut 3 during the time when D-Day was on. And they're a lovely picture of the information that was being brought out here at Bletchley Park. We have items on loan from individuals. We have a new Enigma machine, which is on loan from a very kind gentleman.
One of the challenges you must be facing is that this is a digital age. Thinking again about my six-year-old, he likes things that whiz and whir and flash. And has that been a challenge when thinking about how you're going to upgrade the visitor experience here to actually compete with 2014 and the fact that we're maybe not used to simple things and simple museums and going and reading things?
Yes, it's always a challenge because you want to be up to date, you want to engage from young to old. We didn't want to create a theme park, we wanted to create an interactive experience. So that's why we brought in teams of people who are experts in creating interactive elements that everybody can have a go at, but it is up to date for young people.
It's the culmination of £8 million worth of investment. How long has it taken from start to finish?
We were trying to think about this the other day. I think probably 4 years from when we first decided to apply for the HLF grant right through to the completion. It's been a brilliant 4 years. It's been a brilliant learning curve, and it's brought out so many wonderful elements from the stories from our veterans, because that's who we rely on for our information. We talk to our veterans all the time and make sure what we do is correct.
And now, of course, you just stop, you relax. Bletchley Park just stays as it is.
No, unfortunately not. We might have a couple of days to relax, catch up on emails, but no, we start looking at the future now. We obviously have to raise a lot more money to complete the site and to make sure the whole picture is told, because at the moment we're only touching the surface.
Well, I would say go and get yourself a stiff drink, Victoria, but you're serving lemonade and elderflower cordial today, so there's no stiff drinks, but the hospitality tent is very busy. They're really queuing up to get in there.
They are. It's a lovely day, and I think everyone's making the most of it because they can sit on the grass, enjoy a drink, have a chat. It's lovely.
It's like a traditional English lunch party. Victoria Walpole, who is Director of Learning and Collections here at Bletchley Park, big day for you, and thanks a lot for taking the time to come and speak to me.
That's okay. Thank you very much.
And we'll be doing that throughout the programme between now and 3 o'clock. The food's very nice over there. I'm in front of the mansion here at Bletchley Park as the queue gets ever longer heading into the hospitality tent. Very, very busy day here at Bletchley Park. Thomas Briggs is the outreach officer here at Bletchley Park. What does the outreach officer do, Thomas?
I take an Enigma machine out to schools and teach people about Bletchley Park, code breaking, a little bit of maths.
You have the coolest job here. You get to take an Enigma machine to schools.
I'm not going to deny that. I do have the coolest job here by a mile.
So what is an Enigma machine?
It's a cipher machine that was used by the Germans and associated forces for hiding their communications from the Allied forces.
I'm just wondering what the children must make of it when you turn up with one of these.
Different reactions. I mean, some of them think it's a typewriter. Some of them have never even seen a typewriter before, so don't know what it is. A lot of them have brilliant ideas, and they tend to work out the idea rather than me just telling them what it is.
Describe what it looks like. You say it looks a bit like a typewriter.
It's like a typewriter, but it doesn't have anywhere for paper to go, and it doesn't have the little hammers that pop up and stamp on the page. Other than that, it looks pretty much like a typewriter. It has three little wheels in it that click round as you're typing that help to scramble the letters and make sure you get a message that doesn't make any sense out.
Nicola Halls, one of the very few people dressed as brightly as me today, in resplendent in bright orange. Is there such a thing as orange? So you actually showed Kate round the McAfee exhibition this morning?
Yes. We had a look through and as to kind of why the exhibition is there and some of the interactives that are on the exhibition.
Come on, what was it like showing a member of the royal family around the exhibition? Nerve-wracking?
Possibly one of the scariest work days I've ever had.
Why?
I just wanted to make sure that I did the exhibition justice and that everyone who worked on it got all the credit that they deserve, because it is brilliant.
I'm imagining that the Duchess was absolutely intrigued by the installations.
Yes, we had a go on a couple of the interactives, actually. So she had a go on the one where you have to try and defend your school and someone has to try and get in and see you and all your belongings and stuff like that within the school, which was quite fun. So.
And of course, for everyone here at Bletchley, you're well aware today that today's visit has a really personal angle for Kate. Her grandma was a volunteer here with her sister Mary as well. That really adds to the drama and the sense of occasion of the day, doesn't it?
Definitely. It adds a personal touch to it, which I think is lovely.
But I do believe that the Duchess will be making her way up here. There's going to be some speeches at the lectern and she'll make her way into the mansion, which is, of course, all part of the renovation project here at Bletchley Park, bringing Bletchley Park really up to date, up to 2014. Nicola, enjoy the rest of your day. And as for you, Thomas, with the coolest job on the site, to enjoy the rest of your day too as well. Why couldn't you bring us an Enigma machine next time?
Next time, yeah. If I know.
Come into my studio with an Enigma machine.
Give me a call.
There we go. That's a deal. Let's do it. I'm live today at Bletchley Park, the Duchess of Cambridge, here to mark the completion of the £8 million renovation of Bletchley Park, opening the visitor centre. It's taken 4 years and then probably a little bit more as well of real passion. It's a real labour of love. And today it looks absolutely resplendent. We're basically in front of the mansion here where the marquee is placed. You've got the lawns, which are, of course, the park where the codebreakers used to relax and innovate and think about what they were doing. The Duchess of Cambridge will be making her way up here shortly. She's in Hut 6 at the moment, and Gareth Lloyd has been following her.
We've now moved on to another new part of the Bletchley Park experience that people get when they visit here. And this actually is the first thing that people see when they get to Bletchley Park. You walk through the main entrance and then above you, you have this big red entrance sign. And you walk through past a sign that reads, "Secrets Revealed, Introducing Bletchley Park. Welcome to Bletchley Park." During World War II and for many years afterwards, it was one of the world's best kept secrets. And Kate at the moment, Her Royal Highness, has walked through to watch a video. She's going to spend about 6 minutes here watching this video, which has been newly produced, and she has just met the people behind the production company, the people who have made the film, the actors as well. It's a brand new video that they're very proud of here at Bletchley Park, and she's standing there with the press all around her, the bulbs of cameras flashing, and the special VIPs and guests. What she'll notice, though, when she turns around is that she actually entered a train. They've tried to recreate a train because that's how people got to Bletchley Park. You can hear the train noises now. So when she turns around to leave this this movie theatre, if you were, she'll see that actually she was on a train. You'll see behind the carriage doors the simulation of a train. So it's rather a nice touch that you walk in thinking you're just going to see a short film about Bletchley Park and what goes on here. But actually, when you turn around, you're in a train carriage all along. You've got off your train. You've come to work here at Bletchley Park for your day of code breaking, and a really nice touch that Her Royal Highness is enjoying the movie now. So the Duchess of Cambridge is now making a rather long walk up the drive past many huts, hut after hut, that are today lined with very excited people. Lots and lots of people have been allowed inside Bletchley Park today. People who've worked here. Bletchley Park made up of a lot of volunteers. A lot of volunteers helped to keep Bletchley Park running on a day-to-day basis. And they're here with their flags, lining the streets, lining the pavements, ready to cheer as Her Royal Highness comes up this long drive. And up this top end of Bletchley Park is the big mansion house. The big mansion house is there, but also Hut 6. And that's going to be the really interesting point of this experience for Her Royal Highness. Hut 6 is where she's going to meet someone very special. I'll tell you more about it a bit later on when we get inside Hut 6. But at the moment, all the people that work at Bletchley Park, all the volunteers are lining up, ready to cheer. They've got their flags ready to welcome Her Royal Highness as she comes up the drive towards the beautiful mansion house in the sunlight today. So it's looking absolutely beautiful.
I was just chatting a few minutes ago to the builders who renovated the buildings here at Bletchley Park, and getting the park as close as possible to how it was during World War II must have relied very heavily on first-hand accounts of what it was like at the time. Jonathan Byrne is the oral archive officer at Bletchley Park. He was in charge of collecting these memories from veterans. Last time I saw you, Jonathan, you were really protecting the big bomb machine, weren't you?
I was indeed, yes, and I'm glad to say it's still there and still functioning well, yes.
And still looking remarkable. Now, of course, without these first-hand accounts that you've got from the veterans, you would have been completely stumped, wouldn't you?
Yeah, we would. I mean, there's very few records left, very few photographs, so it's really people telling us what these huts and blocks were like inside, you know, the windows, the heating, the lack of heating, the smell of cigarette smoke, are really, you know, giving us the idea of what they were like, what the atmosphere was like, before you get on to what it was like to actually work there.
Now, of course, these veterans were in these huts the best part of 70 years ago, so by a simple calculation, they're going to be in their 90s. That said, because Bletchley was so intense, because what they were doing here was so important, my guess is that they remember it like it was yesterday.
Some do. Others remind me when we interview them that they were told to forget about it 70 years ago, and years later we're asking them to remember it, and they can often remember the social side of things, where they lived and what they did in their spare time, but the details of the work, with some, are a bit sketchy, but with others, they've made a real effort and have written it down. Some have written books about it, and so we do get some very good information from many of them about the actual work, yes. Yeah.
Now, we could talk for hours about the kind of stories that you've been given, but pick out a couple for me.
Oh, there's a good one. Well, there was the story, I think I may have told this one before, about the wren who used to go on a time off and used to change at a railway station, leave our uniform there, get the train to London, come back the next morning. It was still there, put it on, back on duty in time. I thought that was a great one. You got a lot of stories about how people got on well with the families they were living with, the people they were billeted on, as they say, and a lot of the people here were from perhaps what one might call very different social backgrounds, but they got on extremely well and became sort of lifelong friends. You hear stories about the transport, there was a story somebody told me about. She was hitchhiking back to Bletchley Park and a lorry driver picked her up and basically tried to molest her, as we'd say today. So she insisted he stopped. She got out. Another lorry driver came up and said, "Oh, why did you get out of that lorry?" And she explained what had happened, and the guy said, "Don't worry, Jenny, we'll get him." So a good story of wartime solidarity, that, and a nice ending to what could have been an unpleasant story.
Absolutely. And you mentioned that for some people, memories are slightly vague because they'd been told to forget about what they did here. I'm wondering also whether some of the veterans were reluctant to talk about it just because they're really modest and because they kind of view what they did as just doing what they needed to do.
That's very true. The first thing they always say when we ask if they'd like to be interviewed is, "I didn't do anything very important." And they said, well, without you, whether you were working on a bomb machine, whether you were drawing up lists of enemy codes, whether you were a driver, a cook, this place didn't function without you. And we do want their stories because it's not just a code breaking, it's how this place worked. 10,000 people, how was it administered? How did people get to work? How did they live? And we do want to hear from anyone who was connected with this place. And remember, it's not just Bletchley Park, it's the other stations. The people who collected the information, who worked at other stations, in many cases overseas. So it's not just Bletchley Park, it is, you know, almost a worldwide operation.
There's something extraordinarily humbling about that modesty, though, isn't there?
Oh, yes, it is. It's fascinating to have, you know, almost, well, it is a privilege to be, you know, accepted into their homes and, you know, be made welcome and just hear these stories and as you say, they're modest, but their stories, what they did, really sort of changed history in a way.
And of course, this whole project was time sensitive in every true meaning of the term, because we've been discussing that the buildings, the huts, barely had a day left in them, especially with the windstorms this year, but also time sensitive because the veterans are getting old, and if you don't get the stories now from the people that worked here, they will simply be lost.
That's right. We are working very hard at the moment to record as many as we can. We've recorded over 150 in the past 2 years, and we want to do at least another full 100 this year. I have a team of fantastic volunteers who go out and do these interviews, as well as myself. And it really is great fun, not just meeting the veterans, but our volunteers. You know, I'm working with them as well.
And if one of my listeners here knows a hidden gem, just happens to know someone who worked here in Bletchley Park, who perhaps hasn't gone public about it, who's very modest about it, you want to hear from them, don't you?
Yes, we do, yes. You can go on our website, it'll tell you how to find it, bletchleypark.org.uk. It's all there, and there's a phone number on there, just ring up and they'll put you through to me. Yeah.
We'd love to speak to them. Jonathan, it's a big day for you. Thank you for sparing the time to talk to us, and this really is the culmination of 4 years of very hard work, isn't it?
Yeah, it's been a great day, fantastic, and I've really enjoyed enjoyed it, and here's to the next 4 years at least.
Absolutely. There's Jonathan Byrne. He's the oral history officer here at Bletchley Park. Of course, it is so important to get these stories now, because as we were just saying there in that interview, if you don't get them now, they will be lost. And without these pictorial descriptions of what happened here, the renovation work wouldn't have happened as spectacularly as it has. I'm just on the walkway outside the mansion where the Duchess is going to come past, and there's a group of school children who have been practicing their cheering. So can I pretend to be the Duchess? Here we go. Let's see how you do this. No, that wasn't very good. Let's start again. I like this. I like this. Okay, they're going to be very, very loud for the Duchess. Very, very loud indeed. That's enough cheering for now. Gareth Lloyd is with the royal party. As I mentioned earlier on, there's a very personal visit here today as well for the Duchess, because her grandma was one of the volunteers here.
Her Royal Highness has now made her way here to Hut 6, which was later named Hut 16. And this is the really special reason why the Duchess of Cambridge is here today, and that it's a real personal reason for her visiting Bletchley Park. Her paternal grandmother, Valerie Glassborough, later Middleton, worked here at the Government Code and Cipher School's top secret headquarters during World War II. And she worked alongside someone that Her Royal Highness is meeting now. Lady Body has been waiting patiently just in a room down from where I'm standing. And she worked with Miss Glassborough and also her twin sister as well, Mary. And so Lady Body is now talking to the Duchess of Cambridge and talking of her memories, talking about things she remembers here at Bletchley Park. After this, she'll be making her way for a private lunch, and we'll then pick up the rest of the visit.
We'll be hearing again from Gareth very shortly. Miss Flood from John Lyon School in Harrow. Is it really just an accident that you're all here today?
It is purely an accident. We've booked to come and learn about codes and code breaking and have a lovely school trip here. And we've happened to be here on the same day as the Duchess, so we're very, very pleased.
How brilliant is that? Are you all very excited to be meeting the Duchess?
Yeah!
Gareth Lloyd has been with the royal party, and he's been following the story of the Duchess of Cambridge's grandma, who actually worked here, and she met Lady Body, who worked with the Duchess of Cambridge's grandma.
It's been a really interesting few minutes here inside Hut 6. Her Royal Highness has been meeting with Lady Body, Lady Marion Body, who's been telling the Duchess of Cambridge about her memories when she worked with the Duchess's paternal grandmother, Valerie Glassborough. Valerie also had a twin sister, Mary, who worked here. So Valerie, Mary and Lady Body, who the Duchess has been meeting today, all worked here at Bletchley Park. And she was telling Her Royal Highness a fantastic story. She remembered on the 15th of August 1945, the girls were working on a day shift and were interrupted by Mr. Williams. Mr. Williams came in, he was smiling, and he congratulated the girls. He said, "Well done, girls. A signal's been intercepted going from Tokyo to Geneva. The Japanese are about to surrender." And Lady Body told the Duchess of Cambridge that they just sat there, shocked, in absolute silence. The gentleman, Mr. Williams, shuffled from one foot to the other, and he didn't really know what else to say. So he turned to the girls and said, "Well, bloody well, get on with your work then, ladies." And he left. And that was the time that Valerie, the paternal grandmother of the Duchess of Cambridge, her twin sister Mary, and Lady Body, who we've been meeting today, all knew that the war had ended.
Great stuff, Gareth. Great story as well. And of course, it really emphasises the personal aspect of the Duchess's visit today with her grandma, having worked here. It's inimaginable to think what it must have been like having lived through the war, worked through the war, that moment when you're told it's over. It must have been a mixture of just disbelief and utter astonishment. Helicopters overhead here at Bletchley Park on a beautiful, sunny, warm day. They've been very, very lucky. It would have been very disappointing after all the hard work to have had a rainy day here for the Duchess's visit. She's currently having lunch. Catherine Lynch, who's the media relations manager here. Catherine, you must be very relieved that we're all able to be outside under the sun.
Oh, it's beautiful. The sun always shines on the royal family, doesn't it? It's been a great success so far. I think the Duchess is thoroughly enjoying looking at her reactions as she goes around meeting veterans and people who've been very involved in the project. She seems very engaged and excited, and especially meeting the veteran who worked with her grandmother.
I was very marked looking at the timetable, how precise it was. You know, the minutes were like 16 and 32. She's running a bit late, which is surely the sign of a good visit.
Well, she's been so engaged with in conversation with people that she's met, and I think you know, you don't want to interrupt if she's enjoying it and she's finding out and she's really interested, which she has been all the way around. And of course she's met a lot of people today, because this has been a cast of thousands, this project, and it's great for them to get their moment in the royalty sunshine, if you like, and tell someone so important about what they've done.
For you yourself, you made a little bit of a career jump to come here. You took a change of path. This is the culmination of that brave decision, isn't it, seeing this all happening today?
Absolutely. Next week, I'll have worked here for 2 years, so I've come in and just ridden the wave as we've actually finally been a success story. Here at Bletchley Park, it was a long time where it was very hand-to-mouth and things were done very piecemeal, and it really, I mean, it's not so very long since the Trust was meeting every 2 weeks to see if it could keep going for another 2 weeks or if it would have to go into liquidation. But now, as you can see, it's thriving, and we had 150,000 visitors last year, and we're up about 10% on that this year so far without even having unveiled all of this.
Of course, listeners will know you from our old Milton Keynes breakfast. Am I right in saying that...
There's a clustering of people in very nice outfits, which suggests to me that the Duchess might be on her way out.
Clustering is a good sign, though.
It is, yeah. No, I think these people are actually just leaving the reception. The Duchess will now be inside the mansion with the Living History actors, who are in the library code-breaking. They will talk to visitors as though they too work for the Government Code and Cipher School in February 1941. But we've put something slightly special on for the Duchess. They will be performing a set piece of about 3 minutes in which they take in things like ice skating, going to a dance and making a frock, a burgeoning romance between a codebreaker and a WAF. And they're fantastic, and they draw people in. And it's less daunting than it sounds, because people walk in and they are a bit nervous, and then they get into it and they get into conversation. They see things like, oh, you hear about billets or rations, you know, and it's really good fun. So.
Well, bearing in mind that the actress in there was on my programme 2 weeks ago as a storyteller dressed in a very elaborate costume and talking in a very different accent, it's not scary at all. She was so in character, she refused to talk to me as her normal self. She was very much talking to me like that.
Yes, I know the one. Yeah, well, that's exactly the task they've got here, is to stay in character come what may. And they also, it's quite clever, they form a human barrier. So we take down the rope to protect the artefacts that's usually there. It all adds to the fun of coming here.
Well, I'm going to make my way into a prime position while we listen to Desmond Decker. I'm Nick Coffer, live at Bletchley Park. Neville Budd, you used to live here with your father, who was a quartermaster. What was that?
Well, we're trying to find out still, because he had about six jobs, so we gather. I'm in touch with the Foreign Office to find out what he did. But I came here when I was 2 and left when I was 11. We weren't allowed down past the mansion during the war. But after the war, this was our garden.
How do you remember it? Has it changed significantly since?
No, it's not changed a lot, really. There's a few things. Some of the huts have been pulled down, obviously, you know. A lot of them were dilapidated, but they've done a fantastic job in doing the huts up and C block, the new entrance. Fantastic, really good.
It is a fantastic job. So you're saying to me that in the 11 years you lived here, you never really got a true sense of what your old man was doing?
No, never. We were told to keep quiet and not to say where we lived. That was our life, right through till I started getting interested in the late 80s. And I was down Queensway when they opened the Trust shop. So I started in there trying to get people interested in Bletchley Park.
Has it ever crossed your mind that your dad maybe was a lot more than a quartermaster or a caretaker?
Yes, it has crossed my mind, rather. You know, when he had so many jobs. I mean, he was in charge of getting people to pick up the documentation, all the messages. He was in charge of the transport, of making sure that everything was running okay. So, yes. We called him the Scarlet Pimpernel, because we did not know.
Of course, the real shame is that you didn't know, because I remember when I was at school, we used to say our dads were policemen, because that was the cool thing. Had you been able to say at school, my dad's a spy or my dad's a codebreaker, it would have been marvellous.
It would have been fantastic, wouldn't it? But now, you know, even then we never said anything. We never said that where we lived. Even when we're at school, children didn't ask us where we came from or where dad was. So it was just a way of life. Alan Turin and Dilly Knox were number 3 cottage next door. They could have walked out of the door. We would never have known who they were.
Neville, I say this with the greatest respect, but what a strange upbringing.
Well, to us, it was normal. You know, okay, maybe I've come out strange. I don't know.
No, but it's just being at Bletchley Park among all of these wonderful brains and your dad being part of it and not being able to say where you were living.
That's right. I mean, I meet some of the ladies now. I see the badge that they have, you know, that they're veterans, and I have to go and ask them what they did and where they were and find out about them. Do you know my dad? No. No, it seems that he's a will-o'-the-wisp. I just don't know what he did.
I hope that you find out. And when you find out, will you come and tell me all about it?
Most definitely. I'd love to.
My guess is that your dad was doing some very interesting things.
Well, I'm doing some interesting things now because I'm a steward here every Saturday. Still asking people, what did Dad do?
And maybe one day somebody will have the answer. Just now making their way past those school children who were practicing their cheering earlier on and I think are so enthralled that she's walking past them, they've forgotten to cheer. They were very, very quiet as she walked past them. I'm just making my way behind them here. The Duchess making her way herself down to a tree planting ceremony. And she stopped off with a couple of the children there who are having the moment of their lives as she bends over to chat to them, leans over just over the grass verge here, chatting away to them very warmly. Beautiful smile, and you can see the children returning the smile in bucket loads to her. They really are having a wonderful moment there. Imagine meeting a Duchess on your day out to Bletchley Park. So we're making our way down from the mansion towards the lake. If you know Bletchley Park, you'll know the lake. And that's where the Duchess is going to plant a tree to mark her visit here today. Very excited children to my left here. Still taken aback that the Duchess took the time to go and speak to them. Duchess being handed a spade now, where she's going to, I think, dig a ceremonial piece of earth. The tree is already planted. Two scoops of earth to ensure the tree is nice and stable. Kate smiling broadly, quite clearly enjoying her day. There's a very, very excited young girl there presenting the Duchess with a bouquet of flowers. I wonder whether she slept last night. Must be so exciting to know that you're going to be meeting a Duchess as part of your day out from school. As the royal cars pull up, the Duchess of Cambridge going to be leaving the site here shortly. And as I was saying before we cut out there, that it's been a very important day for the Duchess, not only because it's a big day for Bletchley Park, but because of her personal link, the fact that her grandma, Valerie Glassborough, who later became Middleton, was a volunteer here with her sister. So Kate's great aunt, Mary, they were both here. And the Duchess has been able to speak to people who knew her grandma, which must have been very, very moving for her. And to get a sense of the work that her grandma did, and having spoken to the veterans here today, it's fair to say that lots of people weren't very open about what they did here. We were chatting earlier on to a gentleman whose dad worked here, and he lived here for 11 years, and he didn't know what his father did. And I wonder whether that's the case for Kate as well, whether she had a real sense of what her grandma Valerie actually did, not only because they were told not to talk about it, but actually because they were just very, very modest. And as we were hearing from the director of one of the directors of the museum who deals with all of the oral records for Bletchley Park, he was saying that often he'll sit down with the veteran and he'll say to the veteran, so what did you do here? And the veteran will say, well, not much, really not much. And actually, when you get into the detail, they did an awful lot. It's their modesty that prevents them from really recognising the work they did. And of course, Bletchley Park wouldn't have functioned without the 10,000 people working here, without all of their hard work. The Duchess making her way into the car now. She's been at Bletchley Park for the best part of 2.5 hours. Making her way around as she leaves Bletchley Park to the waves of the assembled crowds. The school children from John Lyon School in Harrow rushing to the other side of the field to bid the Duchess farewell. That is not the end of the festivities, though, here at Bletchley Park. Drinks will continue on the lawn as they continue to mark this very, very important day here at Bletchley Park. And I'll be chatting to some more of the volunteers, some more of the veterans right after this. Now, Joan Jocelyn, she's here. She actually met the Duchess this morning. And Joan, I'd love to talk to you about what you did here when you were working at Bletchley Park. I want to talk to you about what it was like to meet the Duchess. But first of all, everyone around you says you make the best cakes.
Well, I try.
Is it true that you make a cake every day?
Most days I do, yes.
So the secret of being 91 years old is to eat
cakes.
Now, I just had a lemon drizzle cake. Your daughter said that you make the best lemon drizzle cake.
Well, you know, that's for other people to say, isn't it? But yet I quite happily make them and most people love them.
I'm just very disappointed you didn't bring a slice today. Maybe on another day.
No, I would have done.
If you'd known I was coming, you'd have baked a cake.
Made a cake, yes.
You know, someone should have written a song about that. And so this morning, Joan, very important morning for you.
Absolutely wonderful. And the Duchess was so lovely. She talked to every one of us at great length, actually. Very interested, you know. She was very interested.
Well, I think that's what I've understood today, is not only was she interested because it's her duty to be and because she was here on an important day, but she was interested, full stop.
In the heart, yes, she was very good. And you felt you could tell her anything, you know. She knew quite a lot of what she was asking about, I think.
And, of course, for her, this was a way of really connecting with her grandma, Valerie, who was a volunteer here.
Wonderful, mustn't it, for her? It must have been absolutely marvellous that, you know, her grandmother was here as well. Her grandmother was in Hut 6, wasn't she?
What did you do when you worked here?
First, I was on the Hollerith punch card apparatus, and then I sort of went on to working on the machines. And I was dealing in German naval and Japanese air signs. Most of my work was called Tetra. And then I trained Rins. I had 10 at a time, and I would train them for 3 weeks in the use of the machines, and then they would be sent to Alexandria to carry on the work.
Describe this Hollerith punch card machine. It sounds wonderful.
Well, you see, every message that came into the park arrived in Block C. That was a distribution centre. The information was punched on cards, and the cards were then collected and put onto a machine called a sorter. They were sorted, and then they went onto various other machines, a duplicator, verifier, a collator, and they ended up on the huge machine, which sort of spewed out all the results on paper. Now, there were groups of 5 figures right across the page when you started the machine, and perhaps after days, weeks sometimes, the groups would be offset. Every time the machine, sort of every second more or less, the machine would move up and the groups of 5 would move right across the page. Sometimes you would get stuff coming up in clear English or perhaps German, or you would also get reams of Shakespearean verse, which the Japanese like to use.
Jane, was there ever a moment where you realised that you'd hit the jackpot, that you had a piece of information that was just wow?
We were told what to look for. And then my last couple of years was spent in a little area called Floridora Bay, where I worked a machine called the Ince. And that consisted of 4 quite large wheels on top and 4 wheels underneath. At various intervals, they would rotate, and at various intervals, they would stop, and I would have to take a reading. Now, I had to look for a full stop. That's what I was looking for. Every time I found a full stop, the message was relayed to the naval section.
What did a full stop mean, Joan?
It meant they could crack the code. That's all I was looking for. And the message apparently would be relayed immediately to Winston Churchill, who was always on the end of a phone.
How incredible. As I hear your story, I just wonder whether at times your head must have felt like exploding, because dealing with so much data and dealing with such minutiae must have been quite stressful. Your daughter's nodding behind you.
It's tiring, but you see, we had 5 shifts. The worst shift was the midnight till 7 in the morning. Early hours of the morning, you would feel really, really tired. But it was wonderful because such wonderful things happened. I mean, I think the most important thing that happened, because my husband was here with me, you see, and we were concerned with the sinking of the Scharnhorst. We cracked the code in Block C that told us where the Scharnhorst was situated. Because it was such a good victory, or assumed to be a good victory, we were invited over to the mansion to speak to the Admiral Sir Bruce Fraser, and he told us the whole story of the battle, which was entirely different to what came out in the news the next day. It was a very hard battle, and we'd lost many, many sailors.
And you saw the true side of it. Yes. Your daughter Anne is with you. Now, Anne, a lot of people have said to me today that they had no idea what their parents did, and that for many years after, they continued to have no... When did you first get a sense of the incredible work that your mum, Joan, did here?
Probably about 10 years ago or so. And up until then, we didn't know anything, really.
You had no inkling at all?
No, we knew whether they'd met in the war. We didn't know what they did.
So what happened? Your mum sat you down. No, I'll go to Joan because Joan's shaking her head. What happened next?
I never told anybody anything. My mother-in-law died not so long ago, and she didn't know. 1993 and 1997, my parents died. They had no idea. On my 40th wedding anniversary, my mother-in-law came into the kitchen and she said, "I'm so glad that you married my son and made him happy. But I have to tell you now, my dear, that I did not want him to marry a factory girl."
Little did she know.
Because when we were introduced, she said, "What does your young lady do?" And he said, "Oh, she works on a machine." He couldn't think of anything to say, and that's what he said. The only time I ever wanted to shout something about it was when the war with Italy ended and we were given immediate leave to go home. So we caught the last train from Bletchley up to Euston. And when we arrived on Euston Station, there were hundreds of people all milling about, service people, Americans, English people, all sorts of people. And I wanted to shout out, the war's ended, because we knew that when Italy capitulated, the war would be ended. And of course, you couldn't say a word. And we got the first train home, well, the first tube home, 5 in the morning. And I had a good dressing down for my mother for being out all night.
And little did she know. I'm going to ask you the last question, then, because your mum won't answer this. A lot of these veterans are very, very modest about the work they did here. And I'm going to allow you to be immodest on behalf of your mum.
And my dad as well, because they met here and they married just as at the end of the war. It's very true. I mean, we wouldn't have won the war, I don't think, without their effort. It took a long time for them to be recognised, and it should have been recognised a lot earlier.
And in many ways, Joan, that's what today is all about. The secret is out now.
It is. But you see, if you had someone like Churchill telling you there was no question that we would win, we didn't have to worry, we would win, and that was it. You just felt we were okay, and we worked hard, and we didn't mind. We didn't mind. We liked it.
Just as a final thought, when the war was over, what did you feel? Did you feel relieved? Did you almost wonder what you were going to do next?
It was a shock to leave here, but they transferred me to the War Office, and I then went on to work repatriating Japanese prisoners of war. But I did miss it here.
Joan, it's been a real pleasure to talk to you. I won't keep you any longer. 91-year-old Joan Jocelyn, one of the veterans here, and a very proud daughter, Anne. Thank you for taking the time to speak to us here, and a very, very proud moment for both of you. And we are absolutely indebted to the work you did. It's 2:19, and as we've been hearing today, the project aiming to restore Bletchley Park is to its former glory is now complete. The work carried out hopes to help visitors experience what it was like for the codebreakers working at Government Code and Cipher School during World War II, and must have taken extensive research on the part of a team of historians. One of those was Michael Smith. He's former British Army Intelligence himself and author of a number of books about the codebreakers. So come on, Michael, tell us about your life in the intelligence services, at least what you can tell us.
Well, I did a very similar job to the job that was done here. I mean, I wasn't a code breaker in the sense of breaking lots of codes, although one of the things we were taught was how to break low-level codes. It was more intelligence analysis and reporting. And in those days, back in the 70s and 80s, it was the Middle East and Warsaw Pact countries that we were looking at.
And it's no exaggeration to say that although we're not in times of world wars, you talk about the 70s and 80s there, and of course, bang up to date today, the debt that we owe those code breakers in Bletchley is a very contemporary one.
It is indeed a very contemporary one. And of course, GCHQ has been very much in the news recently because of what they see as the need to listen to every single conversation that might be going on the internet. And to try and track down terrorist threats. So very similar. I mean, in the 1970s, we were looking at Middle East terrorists. So that's no different then from now. We just didn't do it quite as extensively as they do it now.
Well, I was going to say, in terms of the sheer scale, it's one thing to be in the 70s where you had, I don't know, payphone boxes and landlines, not always, but landlines at home, the odd office, letter sent by mail. Now, in the second since I've just said now, there's probably been 10 million emails, I don't know what the figure is, but sent around the world just since I started this question.
Yeah, exactly. Well, back then they were working with very new systems which are now very old tech, but back then were very, very high tech, very difficult, supposedly unbreakable cipher systems which the people here broke.
And what is a cipher system? Sorry.
A cipher system, there's a difference between a code and a cipher. A code has a series of letters or figures representing a certain concept or a sentence or a ship or something like that, whereas a cipher takes a sentence of plain text and it enciphers every letter, so it's a different letter to the letter that was sent, and it's done on every single letter. That's what a cipher is, and that's what they were breaking here in terms of Enigma. There were codes broken here, some of them very high grade codes, but the famous one, the Enigma, cipher and the fish cipher, the Tunny ciphers that were broken using Colossus, the Colossus computer, they were all ciphers.
I'm going to ask you a question through the eyes of my six-year-old, if you'll allow me. Because I was explaining to him this morning why I was coming, and he was very excited that I was going to be meeting the Duchess of Cambridge. Not quite the truth, but you know, you've got to keep the fantasy going a little bit in his eyes. And I was explaining what happened here at Bletchley Park. Now, he does this code thing, which is he thinks is quite clever, where he'll bring the last letter of a word to the first letter of the next word, and he'll write it out, and it'll look like code. I think he saw it at a book demonstration once. And he couldn't get his head around how complicated these codes were. And as I was talking to him, I realised neither could I. I mean, at the end of the day, how complicated can a few letters and numbers be? So answer the inner child in me, and my six-year-old as well, quite how difficult were they?
Well, it's very simple with the Enigma, because for any letter, the way it was done and the complex way in which the machine was set up, the possibilities of the settings, just finding out the settings, was 159 million, million, million to one.
There's a lot of millions in there.
There's an awful lot of millions in there. So how did they do it, you ask yourself? Well, they ignored the 159 million, million, million and attacked it with lateral thinking. And they did brilliantly well in doing that.
Just as you're talking, an image has come to my mind of what it must have been like for the Germans when they realised that these codes were being cracked. They must have been absolutely furious.
Well, it took them a long time. There is a story of Tommy Flowers, who's the man who built the Colossus computer, and Alan Turing, went to Germany after the war, and they were talking to someone who was showing them this wonderful cipher machine. This was the Tunny cipher machine. This was the SZ-42 that they'd been breaking using Colossus. And this guy said, it was completely unbreakable. And Tommy Flowers said, after he looked at Turing, and they smiled at each other, and it was just a moment to savour.
What a moment. Your book is called Station X, The Code Breakers of Bletchley Park. What was Station X?
Station X was the name given to this building because this was the war station of MI6. It had a number of different buildings around the country which it bought up ahead of the war. And this was the 10th one. So it's not Station X, it's Roman numerals 10. But because it's Station X, everyone called it Station X.
Michael Smith, author of Station X, The Codebreakers of Bletchley Park. Yes, of course you can.
The secrets of Station X, Codebreakers of Bletchley Park.
You do well to correct me. The secrets of Station X, The Codebreakers of Bletchley Park, one of the key historians here involved in the renovation project. Thanks a lot for taking the time to speak to us today.
Thank you very much, Nick. It's been great.
Great stories. Just imagine those moments, especially when they were sitting there being told that that those codes were unbreakable, and yet they knew. Well, he looks pretty relaxed standing next to me here at Bletchley Park. Ian Standen's lifelong interest in history and heritage led him to become the CEO of the Bletchley Park Trust 2 years ago. And Ian, it's been a pretty momentous day, hasn't it?
It's been a fantastic day. It's already been all about the transformation of Bletchley Park, taking it back to its wartime glory to create a great visitor experience and also an enduring and fitting tribute to the veterans who worked here, which, of course, as you know, one of them included the Duchess of Cambridge's paternal grandmother and indeed her great aunt as well.
You'll forgive me, Ian, because I'm about to cross way too many metaphors, but what I've noticed here at Bletchley Park is quite how many pies there are, quite how many people had so many fingers in different pies. And this whole Bletchley Park thing is a wonderful team effort, isn't it? It's the effort of the volunteers here, it's the effort of the trustees, it's the efforts, as we heard during the speeches, of the Heritage Lottery Fund, the people who've put money into the exhibits. The whole notion of this wonderful project to save Bletchley Park is just a wonderful team effort.
You couldn't sum it up better. A huge team effort. You only have to look at the benefactors board and your visitor centre. There's about 40-odd names on there, people who've provided money and support over the years. And then on the ground here, as you say, our trustees, our staff, our volunteers all work together, some of whom have had sort of interest in this place the last 20 years and taking it to where it is today.
The other thing that I'd like to bring again to the attention of my listeners, I mentioned it earlier on, we're talking to Catherine Lynch, who my listeners will know because Catherine was worked at BBC Three Counties. They will have heard her on our Milton Keynes Breakfast. And I was saying to Catherine that, in a way, it was quite a big decision, not only to leave the BBC, but also to come to Bletchley at the time, which was very much a shell, and the project was embryonic. And I'm going to put the same question to you. I really get this sense that you've all actually been quite brave, if not a little bit foolhardy.
Not foolhardy, but perhaps brave. But I think everybody here, and it doesn't matter whether they're staff or volunteers, has a passion about the story here. We're telling a huge story. You know, my background is military, but I worked in the same sort of environment in its modern guise. So I understand the business that's going on here. And to come and be part of transforming that and telling the story to a new audience is just compelling. And people want to be here and be part of it.
But there must have been times, especially when looking at the ramshackle buildings, which even, I was here last year, they were still pretty ramshackle, Hut 6 over there to our left here. Looking at the buildings, watching the weather come in, watching the wind come in, counting the pennies. There must have been times when you thought, is this project really going to go as well as we hope it will?
Well, bits have been touch and go, and you highlighted that with the huts. I mean, our building contractors reckon that had we not stabilised the huts in the big storms we had in January this year, they'd have been knocked down. So actually, we got there in the nick of time. But once the project started and the team we've had working on it got together, there was no question of us not delivering, and what we have delivered is on time and on budget, so you can't complain about that.
Now, I often say with projects, any creative projects, that if the people who are enjoying them get a sense of the work that's gone into them, then in a way you haven't done your job, because you want people to come here and just see this for what it is. You want them to see the visitor centre, you want them to enjoy what they've got here. But I'm going to nuance it slightly for this, because I'm keen for anyone coming here and anyone listening to this to not take it for granted, because it is resplendent, it does look wonderful. There's nothing to take for granted there. When you look at the history, when you look at the importance of the site, the work you're doing here in as CEO, it's all about not taking Bletchley for granted, isn't it?
Well, absolutely. I mean, the story of what went on in Bletchley Park is crucial. It remains relevant today. What the people here did has resonance in terms of, you know, the peace we got at the end of the Second World War through the history of computing. It still remains relevant today. And of course, we try and do that with some of our new exhibitions here, particularly our cybersecurity one, which takes the Bletchley Park story and rolls it forward. So no time for complacency, and there's much more work to be done. We've still got, as you can see, many buildings that haven't been restored yet, so this is a long-term project.
Now, I'm not a royal visit expert, Ian, you'll forgive me. I was with the Prince of Wales when he came to Thamesford to honour the veterans from Thamesford, the Air Force there at Thamesford. I'm no expert on royal faces, but I'm guessing that when they do visits, it can be a little bit routine, it can be a little bit, I'm sure they enjoy them, but it can be, okay, and here's my next visit of the day. The sense I got from everyone who met the Duchess of Cambridge today was that she really enjoyed this visit. Now, you spent the whole visit with her. Am I just saying that, or was that the reality?
No, I've no doubt she was hugely engaged. Throughout the visit, we had veterans that she could meet in the various different buildings and huts, and she was very animated with them, very engaged in their stories. And of course, that goes back to the fact she has this family connection there. She wanted to learn what it was about, what it was like to work here, the environment and the conditions people were working in. And indeed, when she spoke to Lady Marion Boddy, who actually worked with her paternal grandmother and great aunt, you know, she was very, very, you know, engaged in the details. So no, I think she thoroughly enjoyed it and got a huge amount out of it.
A few of our guests today have given us glimpses of what's next for Bletchley Park. In a brief minute, Ian, sum it up. Where do you go from here?
Starts phase two. We've got other buildings to sort out. We've got new exhibitions to deliver. Some are already in train. A World War One exhibition opening up in spring next year. We've got Hut 11A working on the bomb story and large other buildings. We haven't even decided how we're going to tackle those. So lots more fundraising, lots more planning and lots more work to keep us all busy.
Bletchley Park is basically like having a precious baby, isn't it? Because you have the precious baby, you see it through a phase, it becomes a toddler, you think you're out of the woods, and then you're into the next phase and the toddler goes to school. And where would Bletchley be now? Probably be, what, a 6 or 7 year old?
Something like that. I like the analogy. That's great. It's perfect. You know, yeah, lots of phases to take it through. Each phase, when you deliver it, you breathe a sigh of relief, you show it off to the public, and then you work on the next one.
We'll look forward to it becoming a stroppy teenager.
Stroppy, I hope not. No. Thanks very much.
Ian, lovely to have had you here today. And thanks for having us, BBC Three Counties Radio, here at your very important celebration. And what a celebration it's been. All that hard work. Ian, now I know I'm the last media person he's speaking to today, and he just literally breathed a huge sigh of relief. It's been a very, very big day for him. Here at Bletchley Park, the visit of Her Royal Highness, the Duchess of Cambridge, who was so engaged with the story because of the link to her own grandma, who was a veteran here. And as Ian was saying there, she was able to meet Lady Boddy, who actually had the chance and the time to work with her grandmother. I'm pretty well done from Bletchley Park. It's been a remarkable programme, meeting some incredible people.
Thanks to the staff, volunteers and veterans of Bletchley Park who took part in this podcast. For more information, go to bletchleypark.org.uk or find us on iTunes. Also, follow us on Twitter, where we are at @bparkpodcast, and join our Facebook group. Thanks to Audioboo, who make this podcast possible. This podcast is produced for the Bletchley Park Trust by MC Fontaine. Thanks for listening, and we'll have more decrypts from the home of the Codebreakers next month.